Okay, good evening, all. It's Devorah Krasniansky from Adeyad. And once again, I'm very excited to welcome Rabbi Eliyahu Perero, who will be talking about finances and Shalom Bayis. Rabbi Perero spoke for us back in September on a very important topic of financial stress and Shalom Bayis, and this is part two of the series. If you want to go back to that one, it's at Adeyad, adaiad.org/past-events, and you could also find this recording there after it's done. So Rabbi Perero works with Mesila as far as supporting people in their finances, not providing the money, that would be lovely, but the ideas of how to take care of finances, how to talk about finances, and this is part two in our series. You can also check out all our other resources and other past events and upcoming events on our website. That's adaiad.org. So, Rabbi Perero, let's just jump right into the topic of budgeting and Shalom Bayis. And you did prepare a worksheet that was included on the web, the page adaiad.org/budgeting. And those who did not download it can go there now, or you can download it later, but we'll be referring to it throughout the talk. Rabbi Perero?
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Krasniansky. Listen, it was a wonderful time last time. I got a lot of great feedback from all many listeners, and I really, today is not just about you, all of the listeners out here, and the future listeners, because there may be thousands in the future, maybe thousands right now, I really don't know. Who are listening as passive listeners, I really, really need your participation. And today we're going to be going through a budget, and we're going to try to make some budget. We're going to give some really interesting tips, hopefully. And what I need your participation is in the following. To, if you don't mind, you could send this in anonymously. Number one, I need questions. And I know it sounds like you're bothering me with your questions. No. I need your specific questions about budgeting, what bothers you about budgeting. More importantly, not what bothers you, but after you've completed or in the middle you completed your budget, what conclusions have you reached based on your budget? And that's really interesting. What further questions do you have? And the reason, if you send it to me, my email, it should be on the program, eperero@mesilausa.org. I'll probably say it another 10 times by the time we're done, is because that helps to shape future conversations, because I could say, oh, I got 10 questions about the same thing. That's number one. 10 questions, very, very popular. And it's an ongoing conversation. This is really just the beginning. We need to find a little bit more of a median, what people are spending, what people are earning, and that information comes from you. So everyone who's listening, please be in touch with me, Mr. Krasniansky, in the office as things go on. In addition, I have questions on the bottom. People call me up. They said I got a few even after last session about coaching. And do me a favor, if you're calling about coaching, mesila.org, I believe that's the email address, info@mesila.org. Call the office over there at Mesila if you're looking for a specific coach. If it's for coaching, if you have a specific question about budgeting, then you're welcome to reach out to me. Okay, I just, that was 3 minutes. So right now, if you downloaded the sample budget, great, and you were able to print it out. No, not, a lot of people don't have printers. They just got this. That's fine. It's really great. We'll be referring to it. If you didn't have it, that's also okay, because we're going to break down the budget into 10 different parts. Now, if you do the math, 35 divided by 10 is 3.5. So I have 3.5 minutes for every part of the budget, which is really tough, but I'll try to make it work, do the best I can. The tone is there's a lot of stuff that could bring us down, but we're going to try to keep it positive. And what one of the challenges in budgeting is it involves a lot of numbers. I have that with a lot of clients. They tell me, I really don't know numbers. I really don't understand them. And it doesn't really work for me. So in the end, everything's just a hodgepodge. It's in the sky, and I really don't know how to budget. And I tell them, that's really great, and I understand it's really hard. It's really arithmetic. A lot of what is challenging in regarding the budget is the amount of numbers that you have to get, and it's different categories. So in conversation with a really great guy, Aaron Katzman from Asila. He had a really great advice to me. He deals with investments more than just the nuts and bolts of budgeting. And his idea was start small. Start small. So we're going to start small. And starting small means, what are your fixed expenses every single month? If you take a look at our sample budget, we have about 13 things. That numbers, it's 2 through 14. And that's your fixed cost. So the idea is, number one, to go through the fixed cost, and that people should fill in the fixed cost as we go along. If you do not know what they are, then just guess. That's fine. Do the best you can. And just guess and say, oh, I guessed on this, but I really got to figure out. What happens is when you write it down, if you have a pen, if you have a paper, you want to put it on your phone, like text everything to yourself, I guess it's also okay. If you want to put it on your computer, that's great. What happens is once you write it down, once you guess, then your brain starts working. And that's kind of like where we're getting at. So when I say start small, carve out in your mind for fixed expenses. What I mean by fixed expenses are these things don't change every single month. On the chart, we have amount, we have priority, we have notes. Let's talk about that. What's a person's rent every single month, or your mortgage? Those are your housing, your base housing costs, okay? We're going to talk about maintenance later because that could change from month to month. But we're talking about what's your rent? And priority, we'll get to there in a second. The next thing is, what's your car payment? Okay, whatever it is, it could be $200 on this. On a sample budget I put together for a newlywed, and we'll speak about that as we go along. Domestic help. Some people have a lot of domestic help. Some people have a little bit. Magazine, newspaper subscriptions. They stay the same from month to month. Gym membership. Okay, COVID changed that, but what is your expected gym membership going to be? Home phone. That's number 7. Line 8 is cell phones. Number 9 is internet. Number 10 is gas. It's your average bill. So I understand that for some people in this summer, it'll be less if they pay for heat. It'll be less in the winter. So just guess your average. Or if you have a bill that comes the same thing every month, for some people it's $300, some people it's $200, some people it's $500. It all depends. Water depends where. I know that in Rockland County, where I live, the water prices jumped 3 times. It was about 5 years ago or so. So it used to be $30 a month. Now it's $90. A lot of money. Someone's making money over there. Definitely not me on the water bill. Electricity, again, what's your average bill? And then number 13, we have miscellaneous, tzedakah, and savings. I want to speak about that for a little bit. Now, miscellaneous, there really shouldn't be. You could have some miscellaneous recurring costs every single month. Tzedakah and savings, I'm going to speak about that for a second. Savings. And tzedakah are similar because they come with something called intentionality. And intentionality means that a person intentionally, they have in mind that they're going to put away a certain amount for savings. And in regards to tzedakah, the ones who really do well in finance, my clients who do well, the ones who steig, we'll call it, right? The ones who are in a bit of a predicament and they do well. Those are the ones who are giving stock every month. They're the ones who are giving a set amount. Now, miser is 10% of income. Some people give more. Some people give up to 20%. I guess, you know, it just depends on many different factors. Whether you give 10, or you give 20. Why should a person give miser? So the Gemara says, aser kadei shetit asher. Give miser in order that you should become wealthy. If you want to become wealthy, you should give miser. Well, the Chofetz Chaim explains that why should a person give ma'aser? Because how does it make a person wealthy? So what makes a person wealthy buys into the fact that when a person gives a certain percentage, what he's declaring is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is a shutef. He is a partner in my business. Because if let's say I own a pizza store and there's someone who owns 10% of the business. So if he owns 10% of the business, he's getting 10% of the profits every single month. So when I give tzedakah away, give it away, right? Proverbially, when I give the tzedakah away, what I'm doing is I'm giving my shutef, I'm giving my partner money, which is Hashem. And the idea of the Chofetz Chaim writes is that if I give my partner 10%, you know what he's going to do? He's going to say, oh, I like this guy. I like this business. I'm going to make this business grow. Oh, he's selling 100 pizzas a day. No, he's going to sell like 1,000 pizzas a day. I think that there's a pizza store in Muncie. This guy must have given a lot of mice there. Anyway, the point is, he's doing great. The idea is that tzedakah is very, very important. Those who give tzedakah become wealthy, the Gemara says. You can test Hashem with tzedakah. Now, people come and tell me, they say, 10% of my income. You want me to give 10%. I made a newlywed sample, newlywed. I don't know if that's going to be on the website. Maybe we have to tweak it a little bit. But in my sample newlywed budget, which ended up being $37,000 without batting an eyelash and being very, very, generous on the numbers, since expenses were $37,000, and a person assuming earns that income, that's going to be $3,700 in Meiser, one tenth. That is a lot of money. And some people are in a tough spot. And they say, Elio, they give me they clap an al chet and they go to the next field. Okay, Shalom Bayis. So where does Shalom Bayis come in? In Shalom Bayis, we have, because this is not just budgeting, it's budgeting in Shalom Bayis. I'd be cutting out like half the program. So in Shalom Bayis, this comes up a lot because one of the spouses wants to give and the other one doesn't want to give. What do you do then? This is Krasniansky. You listening? Are you here?
I muted myself. Yes, I'm listening. Go on.
Oh, so what do I do? I'm the coach. I have a thing. It says tzedakah, right? You got to help me work this out. So don't mute. I want to hear let's say the wife, she says, I want to give 10%. And the husband says, oh, we don't have enough money. So what are some possible solutions? And by the way, if you have solutions, please send it in because I need some solutions. It happens every week when I meet with clients. Go ahead. What should I do?
So, you're asking me?
I'm asking you. Isn't this good? Okay. I guess I'll give some. You don't have the answer offhand. I know it was a tough thing. I'll give the answers. The answer, I give two answers. Number one, we're going to try to make a joint, and we say, if you can't give 10%, what percentage do you feel comfortable with? Meaning, do you want to give 1%? Do you want to give half of 1%? And usually they focus on, 1%. And they say, I'll give 1% or I'll give 2% of my income. And I say, all right, great. That sounds like a good number. And the idea is to get in the habit of giving. Okay. We'll talk about savings. Same thing. The people in investments, they get in the habit of saving. Now, in tzedakah, it could work this way, is that a wife could be earning income and a husband could be earning income. So the wife says, if I'm earning $2,000 a month, I'm giving tzedakah. So I say, how much you want to give? So she'll give 200. And the husband will say, well, I'm earning a certain amount and I don't want to give any tzedakah. I want to give a dollar. I say, okay, so you give a dollar off of your income, and she'll give 10% off of his income. And it could be both vice versa. I'm just, saying things. So assigning roles here. So what I could do with tzedakah is to say, since you're earning money, you give the tzedakah from your income. And since you don't want to give tzedakah, so you don't give from your income. And generally speaking, the people have been very receptive to that as well. So either you have a general idea or you have a more specific. Now, we have line number 14, which is Shalom Bayis Fund. And I told Mrs. Krasniansky, I'm going to call her for that. So what is a Shalom Bayis Fund, and why should that be part of the monthly expenses?
So what I find is that some people want to spend money on things and the other spouse doesn't understand it, whether it's a gender not understanding or doesn't understand the idea of it or why you'd want to spend that much money. So have a certain amount of money just set aside that each of them can spend on whatever without having to explain it. So that not every penny has to be explained. So if she wants to buy herself flowers on a random Tuesday, she can buy herself flowers. If he wants to buy himself an exercise trinket or whatever, he can buy it without having to explain it to her. So I call it the Shalom Bayis Fund. Do it, not every single penny has to be accounted for. $50 for her, $50 for him, about to spend however he wants.
Okay, and that's a really, really great point that you're making because I hope my wife's listening to this. This is really good. So let's say I want to go by and buy a bagel, right? Like people will feel a lot of times that when you start nitpicking them, that's when you're going to lose everything, right? If you start listening, if you start nitpicking on everything, then you're going to start to lose everything when you start going over every single penny. So we have a lot of stories of this. I don't want to get into stories because this is about money. But I will tell you that there was an article about Reuven Feinstein in Mishpacha magazine recently. And Abacher was in Shidduch and went out with a girl. And he went to Reb Reuven and he said, Rebbe, you know, what's your advice? It was a basic conversation. The Rebbe said, you speak about the important things. So the man said, the boy said, yeah, we spoke about Hashkafa, this, that, you know, I don't know, Malamala, Malamata. We spoke about, you know, I don't know, all these different things from Sefer Yecheskel and the Nevi'im, all these where we want to go in life. So Reb Reuven says, yeah, but you speak about the important things. So the boy, the Bacher said, I don't know, we spoke about whatever we spoke about. He says, did you speak about when you're in the car and she feels cold and he's hot and he wants the air conditioning on and she wants the air conditioning off? Did you speak about what you're going to do then? The boy laughed. He said, no, I didn't speak about that, right? But the idea is, why is this kid laughing? Well, this kid's laughing because he says, oh, we'll work it out. It's not really that important. And Reuven Feinstein says, yeah, the big things, right, these big ticket items that we could agree upon. But the question is, when we get into things, it's the small things that could really trip us up. And if you have this idea in your mind that it's the Shalom Bayis Fund, is that there's a certain amount, a certain percentage where I say, you know what, let it be. Let it be. And that's a very, very important thing. And thank you for raising that. So that's our general sample budget. People ask, that's the fixed cost. Now that's before you go out to eat. That's before you go to restaurants. These costs happen every single month. The mortgage, the car lease, all these things that we mentioned. And for those of you who have the sheet, great. For those of you who don't have the sheet, well, let's think about it. And this could be just like a thought in your mind. What costs do I have that repeat themselves every single month? And I really don't have a choice in the month to month about how much I spend. And that's a really important mindset. That's field number one. Going on to field number two, and you're going to put a total there, okay? Going on to field number two, we have variable expenses. And variable expenses are not fixed. They could change. And we have groceries, field number 17, 18, restaurants and takeout. Some people have a lot of takeout. Some people don't have a lot of takeout. But I use this for budgeting purposes, and we'll talk about it in a second. Gas for your car, haircuts, babysitting, vitamins, food supplements, extra Shabbos costs, flowers, travel gifts, etc. Should be another field there, and I'm sorry for that. So let's say Walmart, Target, home supplies, and some people spend a lot of money there every single month. But we're going to focus. Those are monthly expenses. Those are the variable expenses. Those are expenses that change every single month. So field one, we spoke about items that don't change. Now we speak about things that do change. And I want to talk a little bit about this and focus on this a little bit. So we have groceries and takeout. What's the average for groceries? Well, the average is what you spend. And some people, they start budgeting with the groceries and the takeout. That's the first item that they take a look at and say, okay, now I understand priorities and amounts. So let's say, for example, we have a family of, I don't know, eight people in the family, two parents and six kids, and they're spending $2,000 a month on groceries. And they're also spending between pizza and takeout and all these other great things, $250 a month. Okay, that's what they spend, right? Why not? So $250 a month, that's $3,000 a year. So when they come, after we have all the numbers in, we start looking at priority. And since we're not doing a stage three, this is just a two-part series, we say priority. What's your priority in spending? Zero being a luxury, like, you know, dispensable, and a 10 being absolute important. Like, this is like the most important thing. So I take a look at number one. I say, what's your rent every single month? My rent, Mrs. Cranston, as he told me, in Crown Heights, $1,800 apartment for like nothing, right? just to get started. So we have $1,800 if you want to live in Crown Heights. That's your basic, that's your entrance cost. Question, on a scale of, and I'm asking everybody who's listening, 0 being luxury and 10 being absolute necessity, what is your monthly rent payment? Well, it's probably going to be a 10. Okay, that's great. So you can write down 10 priority by the rent. That's great. 10 priority rent. Now I'm going to go to groceries and takeout. And we have our Schwartz family who's spending $2,000 a month in groceries and $250 in restaurants and takeout. And the $250 a month turns into times 12, $3,000 per year. And I say, well, that's great, Mr. and Mrs. Schwartz. What is your priority? If 10 is your priority for your rent and your mortgage, what is your priority for your restaurant and takeout? That's $250. So some might say, oh, that's like a 7. It's not a 10. I mean, it's really important for us, but it's really only a 7. And I say, all right. So as far as you're concerned, if you're going to budget and you're going to cut from your budget, then you're going to cut something which you feel is more of a luxury than more of a necessity. And therefore, you're going to cut out from your restaurants and from your takeout. Now, that is a personal choice. And that's something that, as we speak about Shalom Bayis, as we say, you're spending too much. You're spending too little. Have the better conversation. And the better conversation is, what priority is it for you? Ask the better question. Like, what, you know, 250, what priority is it for you? And just to give an example, I know someone really well who has domestic help, and they have a lot of domestic help. And they say, oh, for me, this is a 10. Like, just to come home and to make sure that everything is clean, this is a 10. And it happened with a few clients, especially if the wife is working. She says, listen, I work all day. I don't want to come home to a pigsty. I want to come home to everything's looking nice. Otherwise, it gets a big headache. Okay, 30 minutes later, it looks like a pigsty again. That doesn't make a difference to me. So I say, okay, you know, what's this to you? This is a 10. For me, this is a 10. And that's a personal, that's really a personal choice. As opposed to fighting about how much we're spending, let's listen to the other person's priorities. Now, we have here, we also have the Shalom Bayis Fund. So we say, well, what's the Shalom Bayis Fund? Is that a 1 or is it a 10? Like, how important? This is a good question. Thank you for raising this, right? Like, how important is your Shalom Bayis to you that you're willing to put away out of all the money that you're spending, $50 a month for it? So is it like a 1, like it's not important, or is it a 10, like this is the most important thing, similar to your rent? These are very, very good questions. All right. I thought it was just to be about numbers, but I guess it's more. Okay, so moving on, that's to me number 2. We have all expenses total. At the end of 2, field number 25, we say, well, you got your variable expenses and you have your fixed expenses, add them together. Going on throughout the year, and I'm not going to go through everything here, but we have the annual expenses. And the annual expenses, they come up once a year. I group them, a lot of them together. We have shul, food, yontif costs, sukkahs, Hanukkah, Purim, Pesach, Olamoy trips, summer vacations, clothing, that's a big one. Clothing for kids, it's a big one. Some people spend $1,000 on clothing. Some people spend $10,000 on one season. Then we have shoes. Okay, I know I'm killing you all, right? Then we have the next line, number 37, home repairs, okay, and maintenance, plumbing, electric, home repairs, landscaping. These are important items and should not be overlooked. They don't really happen every single month, so it's important to get an overall idea. Someone may say, hey, I don't know how much I spend on a plumber every single month. I don't spend. So you say, well, how much did you spend last year? Think about it, okay? Go through the items in your head. Come back to this list. Make it a project for yourself. Okay, car repairs. If you have a used car, on average, you're spending at least $1,000 a year keeping it up. If you have a new car, you still have to pay for oil changes, registrations, and license renewal. That's all there on the list. That's number 30. 39 are gifts. Some people are gift heavy. Some people don't give so many gifts. We have the line number 40, Shadow Cosmetics. That could be hundreds of dollars a year or thousands of dollars a year, depending on who's doing the Shadow. I joke with my clients that half my clients wear shekels and half of them are shekel machers. So I can't tell them to like stop getting their shekels done because then the other half of my clients are really not going to be happy with me. So anyway, I guess that's a personal preference over there. All right, dry cleaning, non-monthly trips, and miscellaneous. And the miscellaneous really could be everything from A to Z. I really just could have made everything miscellaneous, and I could have made a really, really large budget. But we get the idea of annual expenses from there. And that's line number three. They happen once a year. Moving along in line number four. And by the way, the amount, priority, and the notes. Notes are also indispensable. You can write down, like, I don't really know. Make a note, right? Like, this could be more. This could be less. What comes to your mind when you do it? The next question here is, I know it's a little tough over here. Starting line number 45, which will be section four, is tuition and camp. The reason why I set it aside, again, is going back to my main theme, developing separate compartments in your mind for different expenses. Because, again, my clients tell me I'm not good at math. And I say the reason why, you're very smart. You have like four degrees, right? The reason why it's a lot is because we don't compartmentalize, we don't split it. But we say tuition and camp. How much am I spending total tuition and camp? By the way, spend a week on it. It's better to spend a week on just one small category and say, I'm just going to find out this week, this is my project. I'm going to find out this. By the way, and it can be very expensive, but I don't have to tell you that. The next part, healthcare, that's a separate category in of itself, and I have the different things there. Coming along, we have home and renter's insurance, property tax, income tax, life insurance, car insurance. I can't stress enough how important it is to purchase life insurance, even for people who are newly married, or especially people who are newly married. Unfortunately, if a person passes away without life insurance, their spouses are left without money. And I really could be a good life insurance salesman because after people do their whole budgets, like, wow, like I really need a lot of money to live. And then I like go in, I'm like, have you ever given a thought of what may happen if any of you will, you know, pass away? And they're like, oh, I really should buy life insurance. Like, oh, well, I don't sell it. But you probably know someone who does. there you go, right? A little humor here. Didn't hurt anybody, right? But really, it's a good sell. And that's really what the life insurance people should be doing, is going over budgets with people, and some do, but what they should be doing or not. Basically, people buy term insurance. They want to insure their lives. They want life insurance with an investment. They buy whole life insurance. And then it's a question in terms of numbers is the investment which comes together with whole life insurance worth the fees that come with it? And that is a discussion which we will have after hours. And you can always email me and tell me your thoughts. All right. Now, how do we figure this whole mess out? How do we figure this out? Anyway, how do we figure this? So the idea is monthly costs. So let's say you're spending $10,000 a month between your rent and your groceries, just these two. So you're spending $10,000 a month. So we figure that if it's $10,000 a month on the fixed and variable costs combined, we multiply that by 12. Therefore, we're spending $120,000 a year on the monthly cost. And then we add together the yearly cost. Now, the yearly cost, generally speaking, if you're paying for healthcare, it's a lot of money. So if you're not paying for healthcare, then it could be anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000. That's considered normal. So let's say we get to $140,000 total. So we had $120,000, which we were spending on groceries and our rent and our car. The annual of another $20,000. That brought us to $140,000. So now how much money do I need to earn a month to pay for a budget of $140,000? So you take out your calculator, or if you're really smart, and then you take the grand total, $140,000, divided by 12. This is going to be a little tough over here. Let's see if I can do it. And that equals, don't all chime in at once, $11,666. $11,666. That is how much money someone spends a month. How much do you earn a month? Oh, that's a good question. So that's we're going to go to the next part, which is what I call number seven, which is the monthly income. And the monthly income, we have the husband's monthly and the wife's monthly. And a lot of times, I wrote here, figure in seasonal reductions in line number 76, which means that if the husband's, let's say, he's a teacher. So he teaches 10 months out of the year, and he earns $5,000 a month. So he says, oh, I earn $5,000 a month. I say, oh, well, that's great. So that's $60,000. He says, oh, yeah, but I don't work 2 months out of the year. I say, oh, that's only $50,000. Yeah, you're right. So this happens like anytime, and people, they get docked for this, they get docked for that. All right, we get docked for everything, or we make more money. We get bonuses. That's the next part, annual income. Anyway, it's very important not to fool yourself. Don't fool yourself. So don't fool yourself on the seasonal reductions in salary. Don't fool yourself on the annual income, on the annual expenses either, because people, they get into debt and they say, I don't know, I was making every single month. I say, well, what about your annual expenses? Like what? I said, well, shul membership and Pesach and Sukkot and clothing and shoes. Well, we don't buy that every month. I never took that into account. Happened a million times with a million different clients. And the point is, don't fool yourself. And that's a very important point. All right. So don't fool yourself, meaning that even though you're making it every single month, you very well may have certain months that are tougher than others. And if you have months that are tougher than others, you have to look at it in terms of an annual picture. And you have to figure that into the account. If I wasn't clear enough during this presentation, then we can have a discussion regarding on email regarding that. Some people have an extra annual income, and the idea is the following, that if you're spending $140,000 a year, then I hope you're making more than that. And basically, let's say you take a couple and they're earning $140,000 a year, but they are only earning, let's say, $130,000. So $140,000 happens, right? Minus $130,000, it's a little bit tough math, equals $10,000. Okay, the $10,000 in the hole every single year. So now that's your annual number. So what is your monthly number? So your monthly number is 10,000 divided by 12, and that is $833. So the idea is, we go from monthly to yearly, and then from yearly to monthly. You take the yearly deficit of $10,000 that you're not making, and then we say, oh, if you're not making by $10,000 a year, what is it per month? Oh, per month, I have to divide by 12. And the $10,000 divided by 12 is $833. Now, the opposite is true. A person can be making another $10,000, right, per year, which would be really great. They say, oh, what do I do with $10,000? I say, oh, that's another conversation. Email me. But here the question is, when we take the $10,000 deficit per year, divide by 12, we say 833. So what happens once I have that imaginary number, 833? Well, when I have that imaginary number, 833, I take that number and I say, well, there are two ways that we could get over the hurdle of 833 a month. What are the two ways you can get over 833? Well, either we can earn another $833 a month, or we could spend $833 less a month. And I say, I guess. So those are only two ways. I haven't figured out any other way. If there is, then please tell me. And those are the two ways about it. And then when we have the whole entire budget in front of us, we say, well, what are our priorities, et cetera. Next thing, our debts, and I'm coming across at the end, but I still have a lot of points to make, so if you give me another few minutes. It's important to list all your debts from 1 to 10, the amount and the interest rate. Surprisingly, a lot of people don't know what an interest rate is or what interest rate they're paying on their credit cards. again, the idea is, I may have spoken about this before, the rule of 72 tells us that if I have any number, interest rate divided by 72, then that will be the amount of years it'll take for the debt to double. Listen to that. So, for example, if let's say I have the number 24, so I'm paying 24% interest, which is pretty standard on many cards. I pay 72 divided by 24 equals 3. Whoa. Well, you better believe it that if you have $10,000 in debt, and another, if you're paying 24% interest in another 3 years, it will be $20,000. Add infinitum. It keeps on going up and up. The next thing I want to speak about here, as we close out, this is pretty much one of the most important parts of the series, is aside from assets. So you do your liabilities, which are debts, subtract your assets, or your assets subtract liabilities, and you get your total number. The next thing is important about your future expenses. That's line 118 through 124. And let's just speak about it. We have home renovations, a car, wedding, bar mitzvah, retirement, vacation. And we have those ideas. People can have other future expenses. Please email me if you have any more ideas for my next spreadsheet. I'd like to know. And we have the date of the expected expense. So you're making a wedding. When is that? Okay. Well, what do you expect for it to cost? The bar mitzvah, what do you expect for it to cost? The retirement, what do you expect it to cost? Notice we have vacation. That's important. Why is vacation on the list? So here it goes. And it also goes with priority, and it goes with amount. And it goes back to the beginning of our speech as we close out, something about intentionality. And intentionality means that I have an idea, I have intent of where I'm working and how much money I'm earning, and I have intent with how much money I'm spending, I have intent with how much money I'm saving. And I also have intent on something that's called long-term goals. And it's important to write those down. What are your long-term goals? These are all conversations that a person can have with their spouse, because the idea of these budgeting with a Shalom bias is to say, hey, Chaim can say to Shandy, hey, what are your long-term goals? They say, well, I'd like to buy a car, I'd like to buy a house. I guess some people have these conversations, some people have these conversations the first time with me, which is all right. And we say, well, what's the cost of that? And when people really sit down and then they figure out the cost of the different items, then their priorities really seem to shift. And I want to speak about, as I close out, an interesting article, also Mishpacha Magazine, I believe, about a young couple that just got married, and they were having a bit of conflict regarding a vacation. So the wife, she's like this Kola wife working, and she put on like, she helped fit bridal grounds or something like that in some family business. Anyway, she's out there working in the morning, getting an extra job, right? He's learning. He comes home and he says, Shandy, this summer we're doing Eretz Yisrael. And she's like, what do you mean we're doing Eretz Yisrael? He's like, yeah, we got to go to Eretz Yisrael. We just got married. That's what all the couples do in Shana Rishona. And says, oh, well, what's it going to cost? I figure it's like $10,000. So she almost like hits the roof, right? I don't know how much she's earning an hour, like $20 an hour. So it'd be like 500 hours for her. And she's like, oh, well, we can't do this. So they go backwards and forwards about it. I don't know. My wife and I have a debate. Do they go in the end? Do they not go in the end? I don't know. The article is like a little bit too long. But the point is that he was insisting they should go. She said they shouldn't go. In the end, he said, it's important to you. We're not going to go. And that was the whole article. I'm not going to summarize the whole thing. You could only imagine it happening in every single household that ever existed. Bottom line is that if they were to come to me, which I don't know if they even existed, but had they existed and had they come to me, I would have sat them down and I would have said, a vacation, $10,000. Okay, Chaim, you want to spend $10,000 on vacation? Yeah, sure. Everyone in Eretz Yisrael, everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael for a vacation, Shana Rishona. I say, great. Well, what are your other future expenses, and what are your priorities, and how do we work that out between both of you? So it could very well be that they both have the same priorities. It could be that they had similar priorities, and it could be that they would have sat down and they would have talked about their priorities. Then maybe they would have set the record straight. By the way, I'm not against taking a $10,000 vacation. I even think I did. But that's neither here nor there. The idea goes back to the Shalom Bayis Fund, is that a person says, well, what's my priority? If I want to build my family, and I want to build this connection, and I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and it's a worthwhile investment for me and my Shalom Bayis for $10,000, and it's worthwhile investment in our life together, then it's very, very good. If it's in the big picture of things, and then it's between both people with the individual cost, the big picture, to work things out. That's just one example. I hope in the time that we had, things were clear enough. And just to summarize, we have a lot of different numbers that I went through tonight. The idea is to start small. Start on one part of your budget. Don't necessarily go for everything at once. If it's hard for you, say, what are my fixed costs every single month? Once you're done with your fixed costs, you say, well, what are my variable costs? What am I spending at the grocery every single month? Like, just start small. even if you start there, you say, okay, what months are more expensive to me? When do I get a hit? When do those big expenses come up? What can I do to meet those big expenses? Is it to get a better job monthly, or is it maybe to take another seasonal job? The next part about it is a lot of things I can't change in my budget. Some things I can, some things I can't change. And I can change anything. It sometimes changes harder in rent than it is in takeout, okay? And then finally, we speak about ordering the debts, getting some good insurance policies, looking into different things. And then again, it's long-term expenses and long-term goals, having a conversation about what are your priorities and trying to amend one's current life to meet those long-term goals. And we should all be together, someday we all together, by the Kotel to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu. Thank you very much, everybody. You're a wonderful right. audience. I wasn't interrupted. What'd you say?
I had some questions that came in.
Oh, we love questions. Go ahead. Where's the money tree? Where is the money tree? In the Midbar, there was a money tree. And if you find out where the money tree is, let me know. Anyway, go ahead. Question. Okay. Yes.
Investing. Where do you, the question, how do you recommend incorporating investing and budgeting? Outlay, future return, which line items? Can you talk 2 more minutes about investing?
Yeah. So investing is very, very important. That would be under 13. That would be under savings. It would be in two parts. Number one would be under savings, and number two, it would be under, that would be line number 13, and it would be line number 123, which is retirement. Again, in terms of investment, there are different investments that a person will engage in and purchase depending on what their goals are. So the first thing is to figure out what your savings goals are, and then to invest in them. If you're having, generally speaking, if you have a long-term investment, then you can go with something more risky, which are generally speaking be stocks and mutual funds. If you have less time, then you shouldn't go for stocks. It should be a little bit more of a more basic investment. There's a lot of good information out there. And what I tell people is, if you want to learn about investing, get yourself educated. And we had a whole symposium, I would say, with Aaron Katzman of people who are really getting taken advantage of in our community, especially because the costs are so high. And people get really, really desperate to make a lot of money really quick. And we know that when people are desperate to make a lot of money really quick, they believe things which are really too good to be true. And unfortunately, people give their money to swindlers or investments which promise high returns and then don't make it. Again, some people become rich. However, there are a lot of people who lose a lot of money. And that can be attributed to a couple factors. Number one, a high amount of trust in our community, which is not bad to have trust, but it's bad to trust someone with money if, you know, they aren't really supposed to be trusted with the money. And number two is the pressure to make a lot of money in a short amount of time. Another idea would be to diversify your investments. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, okay? If you have certain funds, diversify. Give some to stocks, some to bonds. If one thing doesn't work out, then the other thing may. You don't want to put all your money into one stock, and then if that Chas V'Shalom goes down, you're out. So that's just a couple things. Feel free to email me if you have a long conversation.
Okay, thank you. Next question. About the idea of each one giving tzedakah separately from their paychecks, some people feel uncomfortable about thinking of their incomes as separate rather than a joint income. Can you talk to that for a minute about thinking about it as a joint money or separate money?
Yeah, sure, certainly. So what happens is that people feel that they have to earn, that they're bringing in the money together, and that they should have combined ideas of, we agree on how to spend everything. Okay? Like, we agree on how to spend everything. So what I'm doing is taking a step back, and I'm saying we don't have to agree on how to spend everything. and that if one person feels they should give more tzedakah, one person feels they should give less, specifically in regards to tzedakah, that people really should be giving more, then it's, I believe that they could split it. If it's something that you're uncomfortable with, because really what's happening is, let's give me the example of the husband and the wife, right? We have Chaim and Shandy. Chaim, he earns a certain amount of income. Shandy goes out, she earns $50,000 a year. So Shandy brings in $50,000. So she wants to give $5,000 a year to charity. And Chaim says, no, we're not giving $5,000 a year. It could be the opposite. I'm just giving this example, right? So now, what does Shandy do in that situation? Shandy says, you know, I go out, I work, I have these values, and I just can't give this money because of my, well, there's conflict here. So I don't turn to Shandy, really I turn to Chaim. I say, Chaim, listen, your wife's going out, let's assume for the moment that it's joint, okay? So I say, Chaim, let's assume that it's joint. So I say, Chaim, we have to make this joint effort here. I'm going to rebrand it. I say, we all agree that you earn the money together and you spend the money together. However, do you agree that at least on the money that your wife is bringing in, that she should have a priority in regards to spending it on tzedakah? And I use the word spending on tzedakah in the wrong way, but I'm just using it as a practical word, okay? So then he would say, all right, you know, that, then he's more likely to listen. So it could be viewed in a way of two people bringing in income and keeping it separate, which is generally speaking not a good idea. However, what I'm saying here is that since the husband or the wife, right, the wife could recognize that the husband is earning money, and therefore they are more likely and more willing to listen to how that person wants their money to be spent. That's my advice. If there are other ideas, then please, you know, let me know. Otherwise, it's what
well,
do you feel? Otherwise,
it doesn't matter. Like,
pardon
if
me.
If the couple doesn't have any reason to make it into separate, then there's no reason to. But if there comes into question, then this is a possible solution, depending on the question.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and that would be in terms of domestic help. So the husband says, you know, we shouldn't have domestic help. The wife says, we should have domestic help. He says, well, who would be doing the help anyway? And who's earning $50,000? I'm just telling you the arm twisting that I do as a coach, right? If you had me as a coach, you would get your arms twisted. I'm a nice guy, but I twist my arms sometimes. I say, well, who's making $50,000? Well, she is. I said, do you think that if she's earning $50,000, she should also have a right to say how much domestic help she should have? He says, okay, I agree. You understand? That's the way it works. So you got to, I'm a little bit of a tough guy over here, but that's what you get. Listen, that's who I am. So it's negotiating, and we got to negotiate between the two parties. Okay, any other questions?
But what I've also seen is that the one spouse can work harder and make more money, perhaps, like, you know, like if they're selling something, you know, and so they're, if they want to go on vacation or sooner or better or fancier, then they work harder for it. And so it is a little bit separate. My money can be variable. So works harder.
Right. I mean, yeah, you have to take that into account. What I do want to say is one thing that I miss is that once a person knows their number, then they could define really, and we spoke about this last time, once you know your number, then you can really set your standards of sales. Then you have this like corporate idea of what are my sale goals, right? So let's say the internet of $10,000, I say, okay, now that I know I've earned $10,000 just to make it per year, so now I got to make $900 a month. You understand? So that's how it works. Once you have your number, then you can set your sights as now I know what the goal is. Once you know what the goal is, then you can do what it takes. But if you're just kind of like going in circles and you don't have a goal in mind, then it's pretty difficult to change gears. And so you don't want to change, you don't want to get a new job and then still be $5,000 short. I mean, that happens all the time, but it's not a good idea. Anyway, go ahead. Next question.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, this question is a toughie. What if the income, there's a big gap between the income and the expenses, and those two options that you gave, either earning more money or spending less, are not possibilities? What can
okay.
you do?
Yeah, happens all the time. Well, that's a good question. So, number one, it's important at that point, we say, well, maybe it's time to take a look at those fixed expenses and have a discussion. Is it worthwhile to live where I live? And let me just give you an example, right? A lot of people live in Muncie, where I currently live, and it's very, very expensive. And I had a couple that lived here in Muncie. Maybe I even told the story last time, but a couple lived here in Muncie. It was very expensive for them. And anyway, they weren't making it. And it was like $10,000 a year, $20,000 a year. They weren't making it. And they owed a lot of money to a lot of people. Okay, this is like a lot of clients, so don't worry about it. I'm not speaking about you. And I told them, like, well, why do you live here? And they said, well, because I want to be close to my family and we have to live here, right? Like, that's what you said, like, we have to. We have to. I said, well, why don't you live in a place that's less expensive, like Cleveland or Detroit? Well, we can't do that. It's like impossible for us. I said, well then. So you're making a choice, basically. What you're saying is that I want to live in a place which is impossible for me to live, and it costs way too much money to live, and I'm stressed out because things cost so much more money, and it's worthwhile for me to live here, even though I could live somewhere else and earn much less money. So it's not like, it's not an option, right, for a lot of people. Like, it's an option to live in a less expensive area, but you choose to live in that area. And just speaking to that point, then we'll say, like, it's not an option for me to change my job, right? It's not an option for me to earn more money. I don't have any options about where I send my kids to school. And I agree. And I agree that it may be hard for you to change. But the point is that if you have a certain amount and you're making obligations to people every single month, maybe it's time to take a look big picture and say, where am I headed? What's my overall direction? That's generally speaking the answer. It's a more of a big picture question. And you have to answer a lot of hard questions. And by the way, the situation a lot of people got into didn't take a day, didn't take 6 months, didn't take a year, didn't take 10 years. Sometimes people, it's been a long time coming to have this conversation. So for a person to have the answer in a day, I don't think that's going to happen. But it's time to turn the corner and to do some reckoning.
Thank you. Okay, last question. How to keep track of finances? Like, for example, if I get paid late, or in like which paycheck am I up to, or if my children's school forgets to charge my credit card tuition, and then where do I notice that? How do I keep track of that so I can keep track of my balance sheets?
Okay, so there's a program. So you can go two ways. Either you can go high tech, you can go low tech. Either you can use a program called QuickBooks. You could use an Excel spreadsheet. There are different apps you could download from the internet, or you could go low tech, which is a paper and pencil, and have a notebook which is dedicated to all the different expenses. And basically, high tech is pretty straightforward, but in terms of low tech, you're going to make different fields for all the different things that are coming in. So when you have income, you have line one, line two, line three, line four, that's its own page. And when the income comes in, you write it down with a date. When you have the expense, then you have the date of the expense. And there's something called spend tracking, which we have the Mesilla clients do for 2 weeks, is that after they start coaching, we say, okay, now I want you to track all the money that you spend for 2 weeks. Some people have it on their credit card. Another example that one something that I like is take a pencil and paper, and whenever you go to the store, write something down. And whenever you make a purchase, write it down. And become more conscientious of your spending. Some people have issues with that, and they spend a lot of money here and there, and having 2 weeks of taking track really helps people. then again, the what people lose from there is the fact that they don't account for the annual expenses, which in my speech I spoke a lot about, is that people don't get. So let's say something in the middle of January, right? Like, oh, I did 2 weeks. That's not necessarily indicative of a person's entire year budget, annual budget, just because a person had 2 weeks. But 2 weeks is a good amount of time that it gets a person in the habit of tracking their spending. If I may have a final word, can I have a little one more?
Yes. I just wanted to put one more point into before your final word. I think
sure.
that some people have to schedule into their week to like sit down and work out their money. It doesn't have to take a lot of time, but like think about what did I spend this week. Like some people just let it go and let it go and let it go. So in addition, like just work it out. So let's see how much money I'm going to be spending this month. Make sure I have with the credit card that I want to be spending on has enough money for it this week. So just
right. So there's a point of a person, you know, being intentional in terms of their time. Like the people who are gurus on time say, set aside time to organize your week, right? So set aside time to prioritize the way you spend your time, and set aside time for that. So I did work. We would like to post some sample budgets, if that's okay with you, Mr. Krasniansky.
Yes, yeah, so I'll leave it on our page, adaya.org/budgeting.
Okay, so we're going to post some sample budgets for everybody just to see how much things cost. And just as a final word, I did complete a newlywed budget, and people would send me in their different figures to help me complete for the different locales where people live. But I do want to say that even in on my basic spreadsheet that I put together, my basic sheet, it ended up being close to $40,000 per year. And that's really, really a lot of money. So people come and they say, oh, wow, like things are very, very expensive. That's okay. But that's the business that we're in. The things are very expensive. B'siyata d'shmaya, always, we can make it work and have a little bit of a little bit of grace for your partner to know that in terms of money, especially in COVID, things are tight for everybody. The questions that we had tonight were very, very tough. I think I did a good job of answering them. But listen, the questions are tougher than the answers, that's for sure. And to know that when you go through the budget, we don't have to have the answers now. That's not the point. The point is not to get into a fight. The point is first to know what we're spending on and the priorities, and then the answers will come in all due time. All right? Thank you very much, everybody. Again, if you came late, if you have a question in regards to coaching and you're looking for coaching, et cetera, please reach out to the Mesila office, info@mesila.org. And if you want to email me, eprayer@mesilausa.org. Thank you very much. You are a wonderful crowd, as always.
All right. Thank you very much, Rabbi Ferraro. This is very, very helpful. Okay, and good night to everybody.
Good night.